My name is Christina, and thank you for checking into the Humpwayward OCs. This is a podcast where a guest and I talk about our original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Anna Emmeline, and I'm here today to talk about my OCs, Feather in the Wind and Nyira Everlight.
Excellent. And how would you summarize Feather in the Wind and Nyira in a couple of sentences, since I think this is the first time that we've had two characters be brought at the same time?
I would describe them as two slightly insane geniuses stuffed in a trench coat.
And this is in the sense of they are both wearing the trench coat at the same time, not sitting on top of one another's shoulders. Or are they on each other's shoulders?
They're squished into each other, but it depends whose head is sticking out the top.
Mmm. Nice.
Very descriptive, I know. But you'll get the full details soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It makes sense to me as I sit here with your submission of both of them pulled up, and everyone else, it will make more sense as we get more into it. So, who would you like to talk about first? Or would it help to kind of explain the backstory for these characters? Because, correct me if I'm wrong here, they are from the same campaign in the same setting.
They're from the same campaign, the same setting. I played them at the same time. Two characters at once in a Dungeons & Dragons game. Do you?
I do.
Not many people are game to play two characters at once.
Well, a spoiler for Binary Break, the way that we have made it work is that each player plays a human and then plays another person's partner Digimon.
To save on
how many people we have on the call and how many audio tracks Claire has to edit.
Yeah.
So, for me at least, the way that I can do it is by having very distinct character voices.
Well, this was text-based, so we didn't have character voices per se, but I did write them differently. I wrote Feather's words as a lot more common person, salt of the earth, and then Nyira was a lot more pompous.
Mm. Yeah, that would track.
Yeah. To answer your previous question, I do think first some setup would probably be important, simply because there is so much homebrew going on. This is barely recognizable as Dungeons & Dragons.
Hey, you know what? I have played a lot of D&D that used modules, and I wish that it had been more homebrew. So, explain away.
Alright, so, the setting is a homebrew world by my friend and current Dungeon Master, Cassidy. It's for D&D, as mentioned. It's a setting called Kestremor, which is one of those massive single creator projects that attempts to span an entire world, because Cass is way too creative for her own good, and I say that affectionately.
I know that feeling. World-building man.
Right. Almost all of the mechanical aspects of Feather are homebrew, and many of Nyira's are as well. We specifically played on the continent of Enol, which is mostly plains and forests, a little bit of mountain range, a little bit of rainforest. Mm-hmm. But specifically, this is important, Feather and Nyira come from a city-state called Orichalla Palantine, also known as Glyph City, which is built on a convergence of ley lines and was generally considered a major magic center to the rest of the world. Nyira comes from one of the wealthiest families in Glyph City. Feather comes from one of the poorest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And with that, you probably have enough context to get into... I've got the questions you sent me in front of me.
Yeah.
I filled them out in order. So if you want to just go through them in order.
So which character would you like to talk about first? Since I know their histories are intertwined, so it's just who do you think it makes more sense to introduce first?
Introducing first, I think Feather makes more sense.
Yeah, let's go for it.
And yeah, and then I'd speckle in bits of Nyira where relevant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. So, shall we start with appearance, or what would you like to do?
Yeah, we can start with appearance, and then let's hear about history. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds good. That's the order you sent the questions in, so...
Oh, cool!
Yeah.
Thanks, past Christina.
Yeah, so, appearance. From the waist up, Feather appears to be a young human woman. Her hair is a deep dark brown with black ends, and it looks mm-hmm. like it had normally reached to her shoulders, but it usually gets tied up in a short ponytail. Her eyes and skin are a dark brown as well, except for some pale freckles sprinkled across her face. I always imagined her as having Aboriginal Australian features.
Nice. But that's
where the human similarities end. For starters, her ears protrude from the top of her head, rounded and furry like a lion's, the same color as her hair. And from the waist down, she has digitigrade legs and a tail covered in the same brown fur.
Nice.
Her toes end in claws that have been painted black, so it's very animalistic from the waist down. Clothing usually looks like it might have been stolen from someone's washing line.
Mm-hmm,
Heavily modified, lots of pockets sewn into everything, all of them obviously very weighed down. And I think by the time the campaign went on hold, she had also claimed a nice coat. She took it off a goblin for whom it was a full-length trench coat. For her, it's just a coat that reaches to the waist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, and she was always carrying a pair of knives, which she appeared to be able to telekinetically levitate.
Nice. And real quick, you said this was a D&D game, so was this in 5e or Pathfinder?
Oh.
Or...
Sorry, yes, this was 5e. This was heavily modified 5th edition.
Okay. Yeah. And in that case, then, what class is Feather in the Wind?
Feather started out as an arcane trickster, which is a subclass of rogue with a spot of magic in it.
Okay.
That's where she began. Spoiler alert, the levitating knives was actually her using... a special feature of the Arcane Trickster, which is Ledger Domain Mage Hand. The Mage Hand spell, a hand which can manipulate objects, but for Arcane Tricksters, they can make it invisible. So it looked like she was levitating things, but it's more of an intimidation tactic, and she was just manipulating the floating things with invisible hands. So she started as an Arcane Trickster, but she actually went into a homebrew class called Inventor.
Ooh!
For any familiar with the Inventor class by the user Kibbles Tasty, she went into infusion smithing. For those who aren't familiar, the gist of it is the Inventor class is for people who looked at the Artificer class and thought,
mm-hmm.
wow, that's boring. You can't make anything. So the Inventor class is a lot of work went into making a class designed to be extremely customizable by people who love lots of moving parts.
Mm.
If you like lots of moving parts in your classes, Kibble's Tasty Inventor is the thing for you, because there are 14 subclasses, all of them completely different, all of them having a special focus on some aspect of creation. Yeah, one is about gadgets and gizmos, one is about power armor, one is about crafting with curses, one is about making a big lightning gun. And then every time you level up, you gain access to upgrades for whatever it is your core focus is. I think my favorite is, I've played Warsmith, which is the armor, and Feather went into infusion smithing, but I think my favorite mm-hmm. is flesh smithing.
Oh?
Which is basically pretty hardcore body modification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found a post by Kibbles Tasty, and the fact that cross-disciplinary knowledge is a thing is very promising.
Yeah, I am. I had, if you like modifications, heavy wild modifications with extremely customizable stuff, this class is for you, because every time you hit a level threshold, you gain an upgrade, and those upgrades will dramatically change. You might choose to give your power armor a lightning gun, you might choose to give it flight, you might give it integrated weapons, you might give it a sentient magic AI.
Nice.
For flesh smithing, you might go modifying your body into something wild and horrifying. You might make I believe the technical term is adorable critter, which is basically a familiar that's also horrible and disgusting and murderous. Or you might go into extreme medicine, which is patching people up, but you don't use a healer kit, you use a leather worker kit. Let that tell you what it will.
Ah, the Frankenstein method.
Yeah.
So Feather is an infusion smith, which does that extend then to, like, potion smithing, or is it more like infusing properties into things?
Infusion smith is based on the artificer class. They have the ability to put minor magical effects into certain objects. Infusion smithing takes that a step further. You basically infuse your weapons and armor and tools and abilities, and rings and stuff with various powers. Feather didn't get very far down that track. The campaign left off just as she had cracked infusion, which is supposed to be only an artificer thing, but...
Ain't that just the way? But I played
it... It is, it really is. But I played it as her more or less taking artificer stuff that she knew about and making her own thing out of it. And that leads to another very important part of Feather, is that the Inventor is an intelligence-based class. I think it's either intelligence dex or intelligence strength, depending on which route you go. Yeah. And Feather is just extremely creative, and her whole deal is finding ridiculous solutions to problems, but really practical ones. And that's kind of jumping ahead in the history, but it'll give some insight into the background story that I will be presenting for her.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So would you like to get into that background now, or do you want to kind of briefly introduce Nayera a little bit?
I think now would be a good time to introduce Nayera.
Yeah.
Okay. So Nayera is a high elf. The first thing you need to know is that she is dead. She's very dead.
But she wasn't always.
She wasn't always. Also, for those who have any interest in the Locked Tomb series, I wrote all this before I read the Locked Tomb. This is completely separate creation tracks. It just happens to have some parallels. So bear with me here.
Conversion creation.
Yeah, exactly. Dead people, nature's favorite shape.
I thought that was a crab.
Look, crabs, dead people, what's the difference?
You know, if we want to get into that, I'm going to go get me an alcohol drink.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're good, you're good.
So when Nayera was alive, she had just come of age. So she was pushing 100 years old. She was young and brash and full of big feelings. Very tall, comfortably fat from a life lived in luxury. Physically, she had like medium brown skin, long black hair, dark brown eyes, high cheekbones, and this really powerful convex nose. I imagine her as having Pakistani features.
Nice.
You'd always find her in rich clothes, very flowy and comfortable, lots of bright colors and jewelry, but not anymore. There is no physical body left for those clothes to go on.
Spiritually, she is still bejeweled, but yeah. Physically... So, how do we get into this situation?
Well, let's start with the history. So, real quick, if any of my D&D group ends up restarting this game like we've discussed, and if any of you are listening to this episode, Craig, Joel, Chloe, here is your one and only spoiler warning for Feather's backstory. Go away and come back after I tell you it's fine. Otherwise,
if they ask, I can get a timestamp for them.
Yeah. Well, from now on to the rest of the episode, all spoilers. Ah,
yeah.
So,
go for it.
If you want to, go away and I'll tell you it's fine when... Anyway, so, for everyone else, Feather is presented to the group as a tabaxi woman. So for those who aren't familiar, cat-like humanoids, they're well, listeners familiar with D&D will know that tabaxi are not half and half chimeras of human and cat.
Yes.
They're anthropomorphic cat-like humanoids. And those listeners would be absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Those listeners would be absolutely correct. Feather has a tabaxi name, Feather in the Wind, very much tabaxi style, because nobody in Glyph City has actually seen a tabaxi in real life. Her fathers are a gnome and a human, and since they can't reproduce between their species, they adopted a whole bunch of kids. Mostly halflings and gnomes, but a few elves and dwarfs, and this one kid who's gotta be a tabaxi, right? Tabaxis are like cats mixed with humans. Yeah, must be. Let's give her a tabaxi name. That's only right. But what none of them know is that she is an even rarer species. She's a Shirei. Shirei are, as you probably guessed, chimeras. They are a homebrew class built into the world of Kestremor. They're part of the setting.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically made of magic. They need it to live. It flows through them. And if they're ever stuck in an anti-magic zone, they begin to die.
Oof.
They were the first species to evolve sapience in this Kestremor setting, and pretty much every other species can trace their evolution back to the Shirei if they had access to lineage going back that far. Because as a chimeric species, they're so diverse that they, just that sheer genetic diversity eventually coalescing into other species was where everyone came from over this universe, this particular setting, and the way it was populated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over the millennia.
But they're pretty rare now in these parts, the Glyph City, Enel continent. You'll find them more on other continents. And Feather is actually an ermine chimera. In winter, her fur and hair turn white because she's a stoat. And nobody else in the party questioned that she was a tabaxi because, that must just be what tabaxi are like in this setting. I commissioned a headshot drawing of her and actually got a second version where she had white hair, which I would show the other players when winter came around in-game, but we never got that far.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the deal was that she was meant to find out... Like, this is what tabaxi are like, right? Their fur turns white in winter. Yeah, that's normal. It's I'm a tabaxi. Yeah.
Oh, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Doing her best.
I played a lot into the trans experience for that, simply because thinking you're one thing your whole life and thinking, this is what normal people do, right? Yeah. No, it's not. Okay. All right. Well. So, because she was a Shirei, from a young age, Feather showed magical aptitude. But she never got it trained because, also, you know, poverty. Yeah. But when she reached the human equivalent of about 15 years old, her fathers were approached by a city official. The official said the city is running a welfare program to uplift its poorest citizens. They would sponsor certain people to attend the Academy of the Grand Order, a big old magic school that worshipped the three, the gods of magic.
I feel like the key word there should have been uplift.
Yeah, uplift is a strong word.
It is. It's a strong word that can have a lot of different connotations.
It did. And Feather was very unsure about this, mostly given that word. But when they said the scholarship included paying her family a significant stipend, she accepted without another thought. Because, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they did come through for her. Her family got a better house and a steady income. And she could take her inquisitive mind to magic college.
Nice.
She became a full-fledged evocation wizard over the next 10 years. For those unfamiliar with Dungeons & Dragons, evocation wizards are blasty, fireball, ice, lightning guys. They blow things up. Next 10 years, she spent all that time honing her skills. She met a nice girl who was in the Artificer program. Had a grand old time expanding her mind.
Yeah.
Of course, it's never that easy, is it? It's never that straightforward.
No.
Feather wakes up one night close to her graduation under slightly weird circumstances. For starters, she's in a stone ritual chamber, stark naked, chained to what seems very suspiciously like a sacrificial altar. She looks across the room to see another altar with an elf on it, the one I described earlier. Also naked, mm-hmm. but not chained at all. And she hears someone saying to begin the transfer.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yep. She hears spells being cast, and she feels immense pain. And then it all cuts off as the world explodes. Room collapses, the chains break, and she hears a voice in her head screaming at her to run. So she runs. She steals some clothes, hears the guards looking for her, flees town. And all the while, there's this very confused voice in her head, which she chalks up to the magic explosion.
Yeah.
But eventually, the voice gets through to her, and they figure out how to properly communicate in dreams. And
okay.
And the voice conveys some information that Feather doesn't know, but is indeed verifiable. So, like, new information that is correct that she couldn't have possibly known. And that's how Feather learns that the soul of the elf she saw in that room with her, Nayira Everlight, is now sharing a body with her.
Mm-hmm. 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 Worst rental agreement ever.
I just spat from my water bottle, nearly came out my nose. I feel at this point, this is where we switch to Nayira's side of the story.
Yeah, yeah, let's hear the record scratch. So you're wondering how I got myself into this situation.
Yeah, into some poor person's brain meats. So, yeah. Nayira Giltris Valfina Iarvaris Everlight the Fourth.
Bless you.
Thank you. child of Nayira the Third and Zemir Everlight, scion to the Everlight family, heir to an unimaginable fortune, extremely dead.
Yes.
Nayira was a spoiled rich kid who had a strong sense of justice and none of the guts to back it up. She believed things were unjust in Glyph City, but was just a child and deferred to her family in all things. She might have been, you know, 80 or 90 years old, but in this setting, that's just a 16, 17-year-old human. She doesn't know any better. She's not emotionally mature. Nira, I call her Nira for short. So, Nira was supposed to be an arch wizard. She's carrying on the family tradition. And she did show a magical affinity, but it stopped at the most basic of magic tricks. The faintest bits of light and heat.
Yeah, yeah.
She is what the setting calls a stagnant. And her family was not thrilled about it. That's a ruined legacy right there.
Stagnant, but in the sense of you have reached your magical potential. Your magical potential stops at the light cantrip.
Basically, stagnant as in the magic flowing through you is not flowing fresh. There's nothing new coming into it.
Okay.
Yeah. My DM suggested that term. We came up with it together and I was like, that's actually really, I really like that because...
Yeah, yeah.
My first thought was obviously, how do I not call her a squib from Harry Potter?
Yeah.
So we thought about it and it's like, if this whole world's deal is flowing magic, then what do you call water that's not flowing? Stagnant.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's where we got that from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Nira's family, in their desperation, worked something out as she grew up.
Big air quotes there.
Wait, which big air quotes around which part?
Worked something out.
Oh, yes. I mean, you can already tell where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
10 years before her coming of age, they approached her with a plan, something they'd been trialing for about 50 years. We don't talk about the trial subjects.
Yikes.
Nira's parents would pay a willing donor, someone magically gifted, to go to school. They would attend the Academy of the Grand Order, graduate with top marks, and become a fine and powerful wizard. Then, they would use a special spell to copy that skill out of the donor and into Nira. The donor would lose the magic, but it would be worth the pay. And Nira would not be stagnant anymore. The trials were done, the system worked, and they were ready to begin finding a compatible magic donor. As you might have guessed, this would be Feather.
Yes.
And the next 10 years, Nira was really excited. She'd become a wizard. She'd get all this knowledge and it would work for her and she wouldn't have to... She would have a fair and just way of getting this. It's like, sucks to be the donor, but they've got more money than they've ever seen in their life. It'll be fine.
Except,
a week before the ritual, she learns from the servants that she's befriended, because of course she befriends the servants, she hates her family, that the donor would not survive the ritual. It would fully rip the soul from their body and implant its memories into her.
Yikes.
And little old Nira, who's always been very big on doing the right thing, but never having the guts to act on it, well, as she got older, she had become more devoted to the three gods of the city, and they are very, very much lawful aligned gods. And her sense of righteousness had gotten stronger, and this time, finally, she decided to make a move and fight back. She couldn't openly resist her family because they just enchant her and force her to go through with it.
Yeah.
So instead, she contacted some people she knew through her, lower class contacts to make two things for her. One, a reflection potion that would stop the spell from affecting her, and a bomb with a magic command word as the trigger.
Okay.
So... night of the ritual, she plants the bomb in the family catacombs under the estate and drinks the potion. She goes to the ritual and acts like she's going to go through it willingly. And she's like, okay, I'll resist the spell, set off the bomb, grab Feather, and escape. And I mean,
yeah.
a daring plan from someone who's about the human age of 18 to 20. That's just the right level of gutsy and stupid.
Yes. That is true.
There's just one catch. It wasn't a resistance potion. Like I said, it was a reflection potion.
Yes. Important distinction.
Yes. So, a spell supposed to push the spirit out of Feather and into Nira, reflected and reversed, instead of just being stopped from working, it fully changes direction. Nira gets pulled out of her own body and shoved into Feather's. And it doesn't just take her knowledge, but her entire personality and memory.
They cross the beams.
they cross the beams, yeah. So just as the spell's going off, she shouts the command word to set off the bomb. And then, whoops, she's not in that flesh anymore. She's just floating around in Feather's skull. And then... The world explodes from the bomb, Feather escapes, and you know the rest. They learn to talk together, and they came to an awkward rapport. Feather was very sorry, and also angry, but not at Nira, and Nira was adamant that she made the right choice. We didn't get very far into the game, but where we left off, Nira was extremely protective of Feather. We had some mechanics set up where they could switch, and they did have different mental stats and abilities, but it took a couple of minutes to switch. Plus, if they did it more than a couple of times a day, they would suffer increasingly severe penalties. The rest of the party had just found out about Nira when the group broke up.
I am sorry. It always sucks when the campaign breaks up just when, like, things were starting to, you know, maybe happen for your character. I say, as someone who's had that happen a couple times.
More times than I want to remember. It's not fun. I'm sorry you've been through it too. That bites.
Ultimately, I think, at least in my case, it was for the best in the long run. And... the good news is that now I have campaigns that I am in that are all at good tables that are, you know, where we communicate and where everyone at the table wants to have a good time and wants everyone else to have a good time.
Well, I am sincerely glad you have that. not enough people do, and I'm grateful that I'm glad to hear that you have that.
And it sounds like you have that too in other campaigns. Unfortunately, not this one.
I have two other groups at the moment. You'll hear about one of them at the end of the episode. And the other one is my private group, which I'm very grateful for. I've been with them for 5 years, and we all have a very good mix of different play styles that complement each other well.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm very, very thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much the whole story from start to finish. That's as far as we got with those two, but that's the history of them. A botched magical transfer, a last ditch act of rebellion, and then two nerds in a trench coat.
So what I was going to ask is, like, what was their kind of, like, relationship to each other? Like, did they more or less get along as soon as they both figured out, you know, like, hey, you are freeloading in my soul, but not by your own intent? Or did it ever get adversarial? Did you want it to be adversarial or more collaborative? Could Nira see things that were going on through Feather's eyes, or just kind of like a third person awareness? So that's a lot of questions. We can go over them slow.
No, it's okay. I'll start with the simpler ones first. Basically, if Nira was awake, per se, she could see through Feather's eyes, and occasionally she'd speak up without a full switch, and she could do that. But I didn't play it as them being, mechanically active at the same time. Except at the big reveal where they had a very big argument with each other in public in front of the rest of the group, and it was very awkward because they thought she was possessed.
Wait, so when they had that argument, could the rest of the party hear Nira's voice at the same time, or did Feather just look like she was arguing with herself?
She looked like she was arguing with herself in different accents.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, because Nira's accent carried into Feather's voice when she was talking in it. Nira made a point of learning Feather's accent very quickly, and the reason this matters is because it'll answer the rest of your question. Nira felt responsible for Feather. She was this is like an 18-year-old feeling responsible for a 25-year-old. It feels a little misguided, like, mate, it should be the other way around. But Nira came from a position of privilege and power, and she saw herself as responsible for this whole deal.
Yeah, and as someone who has a strong moral sense of justice too.
Exactly. Yeah, this is her responsibility. She needs to take care of this person who's been massively
harmed.
Inconvenience is a very strong understatement. It's actively harmed. Her life was ripped apart. Who knows what's happening to Feather's family right now? Where the campaign ended, it was 6 months since the escape. We don't know what happens with her family. Are they alive still? Did the officials come for them? And I didn't know. Only my dungeon master knew, but we hadn't quite gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with that in mind, Feather basically saw Nira as a victim herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she had no part in this, and they had clearly come to the mutual agreement that they were both telling the truth. I had something in place where they couldn't lie to each other, but it was because they were in each other's thoughts, but I don't remember the specifics. But basically, Nira was very cavalier about this whole thing, and Feather was a lot more cautious and reserved, but saw Nira as a tag-along kind of victim as well.
Collateral damage.
Yeah, collateral damage, and they both despised the Everlight family. Both of them just hated them so much.
Yeah. Understandable.
Yeah. Nira in full revolutionary mode, and Feather in, wow, rich people are terrible mode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the revolution.
Yep. Was that all the questions you asked, or did you have more questions?
That was all in that burst. That was all in that burst. So one thing that I always like to ask when people bring tabletop characters in is, what is the coolest or most fun thing that Feather and or Neera did during the course of your game?
Okay, so there hadn't been a whole lot of plot points for that kind of thing to happen. I did really enjoy the point where Neera and Feather were fighting with each other.
Yeah.
Neera had basically told the other party, she'd basically threatened the rest of the party to not hurt her. And Feather was upset about this, and Neera was like, they're dangerous to you, I'm going to take care of this. And Feather's like, no, you're making things worse, stop it. And their conversation spilled out into Feather's mouth. So it was very fun writing that bit of her arguing with herself, pacing around, gesturing, talking in two different voices. Another moment I really enjoyed, though, was when Feather cracked Infusion. That was a lot of fun. So I mentioned the bit where Feather would pretend to be telekinetic, making that invisible hand hold her dagger, making it float. After she became an infusion smith, though, the subclass of inventor revolving around magical floating weapons, she revealed the trick because she stopped needing to actually do that anymore. Hey. I mentioned earlier that she found a nice artificer girl along the way, whom she doesn't know anything about, but she paid a lot of attention and learned a lot by osmosis, but of course couldn't crack the actual mechanics herself because she's, you know, she took evocation and lost the vast majority of that to Neera. But she figured it out on her own, in her own way, and that was a very exciting moment where she basically freaked out because she figured out a trick that only artificers were supposed to be able to do. And she figured out with nothing but her brains, and she was very, very pleased with herself for that. I should mention, while I remember, mechanically, Neera was a wizard. She had the wizard class. So the way I played it, Neera got Feather's magic powers, and Feather was left with just the vestiges of that in Arcane Trickster. And that gave me room to play a wizard and a rogue out of the same body. With limited switching available.
Something that just occurred to me is that you mentioned at the start of the episode that Feather is a, and please correct my pronunciation here if I say it wrong, a Shire?
Yeah, she's a Shire.
Beings whose very existence, who are magic.
Yeah, they're basically flesh just soaked through completely with magic.
I know you literally just said that Neera has access to Feather's previous stable of spells and wizard levels, and Feather just has her new arcane trickster skills. But I'm wondering how that is, like, I guess how they approach it when it comes to the fact that, like, magic is an intrinsic part of Shire as a species, and this is now something that, you know, Feather is locked out of, for the most part.
The way I played it was basically Feather was reduced back to her pre-wizard skill level.
Okay.
Yeah. This is stuff she was pretty capable of before she became, before she went down the wizard track. And this is just her leaning towards her natural ability, because she didn't... The spell was built around specifically the wizard levels of knowledge. It wouldn't have taken anything before that or after that, because that's all the parents wanted their child to have. Just an archmage skill set. So, Feather got basically leveled back down to one from whatever level 10 years of that would take from her. And that's where we, how I played it in relation to that. The other reason was just magic is wonky and Shire are full of it, so sometimes weird things happen. That's how Neera ended up with it. But if my DM had other plans for it, I never found out. There was never time to go much further with that. But that's the gist of it. Basically, Feather just got leveled back down to level one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the answer to the question you were asking?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. So, when it comes to, like, creating both Feather and Nayera as characters, do you have any favorite, like, idiosyncrasies or habits that you gave them that just, like, really locked them into being a character? Because I've seen and I've experienced that a lot of the times, like, what you really need to get a character set for a tabletop game is you need a gimmick. Aside from the whole body sharing thing.
Yeah. So, for Feather, and this plays into the section you actually sent me about how you see yourself in them.
Oh yeah?
So Feather's gimmick is basically the inventor class and how I played that flavor-wise. So I love this class. I want to eventually play characters across all 14 subclasses, and even then, there's enough room that you can play even one subclass and have massive variation wherever. It's like the class was made for me, because I love to take things apart and put them back together. I'm a tinkerer at heart. I've been at it since I was a kid. I was pulling apart electronics, building computers out of scavenged junk, to wrangle Dungeons and Dragons into something more complex and interesting. But I'm also a storyteller at heart, and I love to create coherent and meaningful stories about things which matter to me. And Feather and Nayera embody every part of that, because every time a problem appeared, I would have them work to make a thing which would solve it. For instance, we had a friendly vampire who needed to block out the smell of blood. Feather actually went out and spent money and bought tools and materials and made her a mask with pouches to hold strong-smelling herbs inside it.
Yeah.
We had a box that needed to be unopenable, so we carved one that had a complex lock on the inside of it, which needed to be manipulated by a mage hand reaching through a tiny crack in the lid.
Okay.
We had political situations pop up, and Nira would go ahead and orchestrate some nonsense that Feather couldn't have conceived of by playing her skill set right. Mm-hmm. Little things like that, where they are the problem solvers. When a problem comes up, they will find some solution to solve it. And my dungeon master, who loves this kind of creativity, gave me a lot of room and a lot of leeway.
Oh, I love it when that happens.
Yeah, I love it too. She asked for very fair trade-offs, like mechanically and monetarily, and just let me go nuts. Eventually, we were going to have a solution for getting Nira out of Feather's body, because our campaign revolved around curses a lot.
Yeah.
And physical residue left by curses. And we were basically going to have Nira inhabit a kind of, there's no other way to put this, goop from a curse and form it into a physical body, and then she'd have a flesh vehicle of her own. And we were going to split them up that way.
Building herself a construct to live in.
Precisely, yeah.
Because I've seen that in Kingdom Hearts.
Gosh. I feel like there's some Wayfarers in there for people who have read the first two books, but I won't say any more because spoilers. But yeah, both of them embody every part of that desire to create things and scavenge things and tinker things. They're incredibly mechanically complex. They're both got so many potential futures. Nira was going to go from wizard into the curse smithing, aforementioned subclass, and into infusion smithing, because mechanically they're very similar, just inverse of each other. One is infusing things with nice, one is infusing things with nasty.
Yeah.
And they're both limited by their circumstances and went through extreme trauma. And their response was to get creative and make things. Mm-hmm. And that's me. That's my whole life right there.
Hey.
I mean, besides, Nira is the kind of person I thought I was as a kid in the very strange circumstances of my childhood. While Feather is the kind of person I actually was. I'll not go into details on air, but both of them resonate with me very deeply. One with the story I believed as a child, and then the other with the truths I realized as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's their gimmick. When things go wrong, when they're up a creek without a paddle, mm-hmm. Look at me trying to find ways to mince my oaths here, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
When things go wrong, when they're in a sticky situation, they look to solutions and they make things. And they mm-hmm. actually make actual things in game. Oh, here's one. We had a party member who was from Snowy Mountains, and she didn't like living in the lowlands because it was too hot. But she also liked her heavy fur coat. Mm-hmm. And so I went into the nitty-gritty of certain spells, and I found that the spell Prestidigitation can change the temperature of things for an hour.
Yeah.
But it only does things inside a 5-foot cube. So every hour, Feather would take this character's coat, bundle it up, cast Prestidigitation on it to make it cold, give it back to her, and then an hour later she'd repeat. And she was working on a way to set it to do that permanently, just a passive makes it colder effect for the comfort of this character. And the other player only did that for flavor, but I thought, how can I fix this?
You know, that is an actual invention that I know exists, because I have heard of, like, people who play the Beast in Beauty and the Beast on, like, on a Broadway stage. They will have, like, cooling components built into the giant fursuit they're wearing on stage. And, like,
that makes perfect sense.
God, especially if it's an outside performance, don't even get me started.
Yeah.
But that kind of, I guess, like, person-focused accessibility and invention is really cool.
Yeah. It's a problem comes up that most people don't think about, but someone was like, I'm going to flesh out my character by making it, by making them feel like they've come from the Snowy Mountains. And I'm like, how can I bring the Snowy Mountains to you? Snowy Mountains on your doorstep.
So this was not on the list of questions that I sent you ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it occurred to me that, like, what in, like, the perfect blue sky universe where Nayera and Feather are able to live a physically separate existence, like, and mm-hmm. you know, assuming that the big scheme of things, conflicts from their campaign are resolved in a positive manner and they both survive and everything, like what do you think would happen with them? Would they work together? Would they still be on speaking terms?
I like the idea that Nayera goes back to Glyph City, overthrows the oligarchy, and from her position of power, and does something to improve the prospects of the city and equalize it. But that is also because I'm a dirty, dirty communist, and I write what I know.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not realistically. You said the blue sky universe.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yes,
blue sky universe.
Blue sky universe. The city gets fixed up. Everyone is brought to a more equal socioeconomic level. Universal basic income. Free education for all. You know the drill. But mm-hmm. also, for the characters themselves, Nayera would go straight back to this place, which represents the three gods of justice and magic she believes in, and she mm-hmm. would try and make it into something they could be proud of. Feather, on the other hand, I think would prefer a quieter life. She'd go back to her family. She'd go back to being a big sister as a 25-year-old to 60-year-old elves, who are, you know, the emotional equivalent of 10 or 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But I do think they'd still be on speaking terms, especially if Feather, like, she could really understand that Nayera meant everything she said, and there would probably be a lot of cooperation during that revolution. Mm-hmm. But
probably a lot at the end of the day, dang, your family really sucks, huh?
Yeah. Both of them seeing each other's family, being like, wow. Wow, that the Everlights aren't nice people. No, they're not.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. In Australia, there are a couple of families that benefited from mining, coal mining, and most of our right-wing politicians are influenced by the coal mining industry, which is really messing up
our
country. Yeah, I can't imagine.
Same.
Yeah. I thought a lot about these families when I was writing The Everlights.
Mm-hmm.
Except with magic, they have just very strong magic power instead of access to dead dinosaurs and trees and stuff.
God, could you imagine Nayera and Feather creating an automaton dinosaur?
Here's the thing, they totally could because they're inventors.
Uh-huh.
There's an inventor subclass dedicated to making your own little mechanical thing that can either be used as a pet class or a mech suit.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's so much room there.
Imagine making a pet-sized robotic dinosaur and or mech suit, and then you cast Enlarge on it, and then, surprise, it's Godzilla in the streets of Glitch City.
Yes, excellent.
It is my dream to someday wreak that kind of chaos with the Enlarge spell.
Gosh, yeah. Like, you need someone who can cast Polymorph and someone who can cast Enlarge Reduce, and preferably on a Rune Knight who can also enlarge themselves. Yeah, there's something there. There's something there. I love getting into the nitty and gritty of creative mechanics.
Yeah. And
if you're okay with it, that actually leads into why I made them at the time.
Yeah, shoot.
Yeah. So the reason I made these characters was I was very bored with D&D 5th edition, and I was exploring other systems and mechanics.
You needed enrichment.
Yeah, I did. I needed enrichment in my enclosure. So when I play D&D, I like to look up some kind of mechanics that I find fun or cool or interesting, build mm-hmm. that framework up first, and then use a character to justify them.
Yeah.
That's the inverse of the way a lot of people do it, where they come up with a character first and then mechanically set them up. But I like to build a framework and then use that framework to, like a model armature made of wireframe, and then I paper mache plot onto them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means that my characters are often highly gimmick focused or really strongly optimized. Some might argue min maxed, but I always justify with the best story I can. And if I may say so, I think I'm pretty darned good at it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to min-maxing, there's a way to play a character who is optimized. And then there's just min-maxing.
Yeah. I love the mechanical challenge of min-maxing, and I love the creative challenge of story writing, and blending the two of them into a character is my favorite thing. So I'm there in that state, like, itching for something new, and my dungeon master approaches me and says, hey, I want to try out a homebrew rule set for switching characters. And I'm like, heck yes, let me at it. And at the time, I was playing the video game Pathfinder Kingmaker. And without any spoilers, there's a pair of characters who don't literally inhabit the same body, but they have a similar swapping mechanic. You can only use one of them at a time, and they inhabit the same space. It's any more is spoilers, but that's the gist of it.
Okay.
And so I was inspired by that. And working with the DM, I came up with a story that used the setting of Glyph City to justify it. And that's another thing. I love taking settings that I've been given by the DM and thinking, okay, where does my character come from in this? What is her place? What is...
Yeah. Let me play in the space.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I don't actually know where Feather came from before her adoption. That's a DM secret. I may never find out, but if we do pick it up with my other group... I may. We'll find out.
I hope that you get to.
Thank you. I hope so too. And if any of that group is listening and we haven't done this yet, you've done it to yourself. I warned you. It's too late for you now. You know everything.
I feel that. Except for the fact that so far the characters that I have personally brought onto the show, none of them know what this podcast is called. but that's just me liking to have the, I don't know, the separation, I guess.
It is good to have that separation. I'll probably only tell that this, mention this to my dungeon master and not the rest of the players in the group, but we'll see if they manage to get it out of me.
That is fair. So, did you have anything that you wanted, any last bits you wanted to talk about with Feather and Nyagara before we go into the last question for today?
Yes, actually. Yes, I do have something else to mention. And that is their wizard familiar.
They've had a pet this whole time and you didn't bring them up?
I'd forgotten.
Fair.
Imagine a white ermine moth. I recommend Googling them. They're extremely cute. Mm-hmm. This is a little confusing, but they're unrelated to ermine moths. White ermines are different. You're looking for Spilosoma lubricopedia. No, lubricipeda. If you want to take a moment to look that up now, do so.
Aw, fuzzy guy.
Right? They're so fuzzy.
These are fuzzy guys and I like them. What were we going to say?
So, a little confusing. They're unrelated to ermines. White ermines are different. You're looking for Spilosoma lubricipeda. They are white moths with black spots and antennae and fuzzy mm-hmm. backs and stripy, orangey, yellowy abdomens. They're very cute and fuzzy and adorable. Now, mm-hmm. imagine one the size of a cat.
Oh, that's good.
A magic creature, so you can touch her and her wing scales don't come off. She's mm-hmm. very soft and plush, and she chitters when she's happy, and she loves to cuddle.
Aww.
And that is the familiar named Mina. She's a very Aww. Good girl.
Aww.
There's also a whole thing where she's a kind of spirit that's connected to the Shire, but that was something we didn't get to explore a lot of. The point is, she's their familiar, and I love her as much as the girls themselves love her. She's a nice. Very good girl. We had a running gag where the party barbarian was really squicked out by her and hated her. But Mina would like flutter over to her when she was sleeping at night, and she'd like cuddle her without thinking in her sleep.
Aww.
And I wish we could have explored that more. But that's Mina. That's the cat-sized moth.
Maybe you will get to explore that again someday. Especially since it sounds like their campaign, or your campaign with Feather and Nyagara, that is, ended on terms that, like, the door is closed, it is not locked. If that makes sense. It's getting like my sense of metaphors is slowly leaving me.
It's all good. The dungeon master who ran the Kestremor game is currently the dungeon master of my private game group as well. So there's very much room for that to come back, because we're taking a break from long games at the moment, and we're doing shorter, low-level games in different universes, so there's a very good chance of this going somewhere.
I hope so.
Thank you. But yeah, that's what the last thing I wanted to mention. That's Mina. She's the cat-sized white moth who chitters and snuggles and is very plush. And also, Feather would regularly just sit her on her head and look through her eyes, because she was based on the owl stat block, so she had advantage or plus 3 to perception checks. Either way, she had better perception checks than Feather, so I would abuse that.
I wish I could have a familiar in real life. That'd be fun.
I know, right? Just an animal you're like semi-psychically connected to.
Tell my cat to get up and get me a snack. So your last question for today, Anna, is why do you love Feather and Nyagara so much?
Why do I love them so much? I think I just really love the relationship between Nyagara and Feather in the same way that I look at the relationship between my younger self and my older self. So Feather is this older girl, jaded, emotionally wounded, terrified for her life, but ultimately the one in power.
Mm-hmm.
And Nyagara is younger, more brash, has absolutely no regrets about dying for this woman who went through 10 years of schooling for her. She's really believes in the equality and balance preached by her religion, and she's lost the body that would have let her change that, but aims to do everything she can with what she has left, even if it's just a few hours a day in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Feather is finding out who she is as without those safety nets. She's learning to make things and make solutions and find out who she is and what she likes and what she believes in. And as time went on, she would have more found her place in the world. And just as that reflects for me, I spent my youth thinking that I was basically taught that I was destined for great things. Long story there, but I was more or less brainwashed into believing that. And I held on to that for so long and took it as fact that I did a lot of very stupid things which I thought were right because I thought there's no way I could fail. And I had no regrets about the damage I caused, the collateral. As it is now, I'm a lot more mellow and a lot more mature than I was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And I now am much better at creating the kind of life that I value and that has the things I value in it. And I love these girls so much because... They're parts of me. They're parts of what I was and where I came from. Different aspects of that. One from my teen years, one from my early 20s.
I'm just picturing you with, like, your arm around both of them, like, one on either side, like, these are my girls!
Basically, yeah. I've got either... A furry in one arm and a corpse in the other, or a furry in one arm and a slimy goop in the other. My hands kind of slowly sinking through Nayera's torso from the sludge. Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, look, this is a podcast where we embrace ROCs as long as they are okay with being embraced back.
Yeah.
But yeah. So thank you so much, Anna, for coming on to talk about Feather and Nayera. I love getting to hear about them.
Thank you for having me. I haven't really gotten the chance to talk about these two with anyone else before, so I'm very grateful to you for offering me the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So where would you like to be found on the internet? And I know you have things that you would like to shout out and or promote.
Well, the main thing that I would promote is you can find me as the current Dungeon Master of the podcast Gem Jammer. We are a live play Dungeons & Dragons podcast in a Spelljammer setting.
Gem Jammer, which is the home of previous guested OC Jilliana, who was also featured on our album art.
Yeah, and you'll also find Mackenzie Weaver on there, who I believe is on there. And in the earlier episodes, you'll find Kit Walker, who has also been on this show. Mm-hmm. I think all you need now are Rio Rios and Alexi Peppers for complete the Gem Jammer set.
I know they are also both pretty busy, so
yeah,
I will, when they are freed, they're welcome to come on. I also know scheduling is a bear, so...
Yeah, scheduling is rough. So Gem Jammer is a podcast aimed at basically bringing glam and glitter and gayness into magic outer space. It's a ridiculous setting from the second edition where things were on like the lawless frontier of Dungeons & Dragons.
But it works in Gem Jammer.
It does work in Gem Jammer, and there's a lot of love that goes into making it work. So there are a lot of episodes right now, over 100, but as of this recording, I'm currently working on a recap episode, so if anyone wants to come check it out, hopefully the recap episode will be out soon and will make it much easier to catch up than listen to 100 episodes.
I love an abridged recap.
Yeah, yeah. Gem Jammer can be found on wherever you get your podcasts. It's part of the Crooked Russian Cam network, which can be found at crookedrussiancam.horse or crookedrussiancam.gay. You'll find aforementioned guests Annie, Mackenzie, and Kit Walker doing such shows as I Will Fight You and Date Me, Damn It. Aside from that, the only real social media I use at the moment is Blue Sky, but honestly, but I don't know what's gonna, I don't know what's gonna, whether that's gonna stick around or not, given the way, Twitter has fallen apart. I'm not calling it by the other name, that's stupid.
No.
So if you do search me, my username is palindrome.bluesky.social. I feel like the name's a bit self-explanatory there. But yeah, I don't really do anything exciting there. I just post pictures of my cat. So if you like, if you want to see my cat...
Cat photos are an important resource.
Yeah, if you want to see my cat Mel or my housemate's cat Mercury, come on over to palindrome.bluesky.social and you'll see them. As well as whatever ever nonsense I repost.
Nice.
Nice. So yeah, that's about it. That's where you can find me. Aside from that, I don't think I have anything else to promote. No. I don't really do anything else on the internet. Which is a blatant lie, but
honestly,
I don't create anything else.
Smart.
On the
smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But speaking of being places on the internet, the Home Forward OCs is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. We can be found through Acast and your local podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is Violet by Poddington Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. We can be reached at waywardocpod@gmail.com or at waywardocpod on Twitter and now Blue Sky. This podcast is partly recorded on the ancestral lands of the Kiakapui, Kaw, Osage, and the Ocheti Shukalan. If you'd like to talk about Wayward or the other Corner Podcast Network shows, we have our own Discord server, and there should be an invite linked on social media. If not, just direct message one of the show accounts, and I can get you set up. And I'm always looking for guests to talk about their original characters, so if you or someone you know is interested, feel free to drop me a line. And there's also a fillable Google form that is pinned on both the Twitter and Blue Sky accounts, I believe. And as with all podcasts, it's always super helpful if you can subscribe to us and recommend us to a friend, because it helps us to find a wider audience and to brighten more people's days. So, thank you all for listening. This has been the Home for Wayward OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay.
Was supposed to be an arch wizard, carrying on the family tradition. There is a plane overhead. Please go away.
This is a CBC podcast.
Reconciliation is a fuzzy word.
They didn't discover, they stole it.
You know, that's the thing about names, because a name has a spiritual connection to you.
As Indigenous people, we are used to our stories getting a little twisted. So listen up as we set the record straight. I'm Ganyeh Dio. Please join me as we hear from dozens of Indigenous people. Together, we will decolonize our words and our minds on the Telling Our Twisted Histories podcast.
I base my movements and how I move in the world on relationships.
Well, if they call us savages, that's their problem.
Oh, boy.
Canada.
Canada.
Well, doesn't it derive from Agonyagawa word?
Ganada.
It's village.
The only thing I feel you should obey is your true, authentic self.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.